So let's go ahead and dive in. We're continuing our article Nuts and Bolts series that we started actually in February. This is the diary piece is a very interesting type of article. It's something that, you know, inherent in the nature, the diary aspect of it, it's something that we all theoretically can write, that we all theoretically know how to write. And perhaps some of you, but definitely some people that I coach or some other writers that I've met, are in the situation where they came into writing in a more travel article setting later in life. Perhaps they didn't do any writing, maybe they're photographers, or maybe they just traveled a lot. And then by virtue of the machinations of the world, they started writing travel articles. And people are like, wow, you're so great at writing these articles. And the person says, well, I have no idea what I'm doing. So that's often means that you started out with a great diary style piece, because this is something that's very natural to write. You're talking about your own experience and what you did. However, because they're so easy to write, and because so many people are writing them, perhaps on blogs or on Facebook these days, tends to be kind of replace the old live journal model of keeping a diary for your friends when you're traveling. Because so many people write them, there's also a lot of them out there that are not the quality of what a magazine or a high-level website is looking for. So there's a different bar that you need to clear, even if you're writing the same type of piece. And that is what we're going to focus on today. So specifically, what I want to look at is when I say diary piece, what does that mean? How does that differ from what you might imagine or from an actual diary? And how does that differ from perhaps what people are writing on blog posts or even perhaps what people are writing in magazines that you might think looks kind of like I went here, I did this, and I did this, but actually isn't what I mean when I say diary style piece for what we're going to look at today. And then I'm going to show you some examples. Before we get into the examples of the right thing to do, I'm going to show you some examples of the wrong thing to do, because it's not always fun. And I've made sure that there's no attribution, so you will not know what I'm showing you when I show you the wrong thing to do, but it's one of those things, like I said, in the email and the blog post before today's webinar. Usually you know it when you see it. It's often a little harder to know what's the right thing to do, but I'm just going to show you one example of not a publishable diary style piece before we get into the real world examples of what people are out there getting paid hundreds and hundreds of dollars to write. So after that, we're going to take a minute to talk about where to pitch these pieces, what types of outlets they go in, and what you need to say and do and how you need to position the piece if you want to write one. Now, I'm going to mention earlier on in the call what are the different types of publications or outlets that you can publish these pieces in. So as I mentioned, we all are no doubt familiar with the Dear Diary. Today, this boy looked at me and I have been looking at him for months and I just could not believe that finally he looked in my direction. Type of diary, right? We're all familiar with that, whether in, you know, actual we've done it ourselves or, you know, we see it in movies. We're all familiar with that concept, even though today, in a lot of ways, I feel like the concept of the diary has kind of become extinct as people tend to live more publicly online. But we all know this idea, which is that it's a somewhat chronological, and I say somewhat because people typically start their diary entries with something that they're thinking about, something that's on their mind, and then they talk all about that thing. So it's a somewhat chronological relaying of events that have happened, right? So I have a good friend who I've spent a lot of time traveling with. We used to live in Italy together. And she writes these really, really long diary entries. I've never seen them. I've never asked, actually. But she writes these really, really long diary entries. And I remember when we first moved back to the U.S. together, we were in a hotel somewhere, and I said, how come you're not writing in your diary? You're just going to bed. And she's like, oh, well, I'm here. Like, there's nothing interesting happening. So one thing that we often think of is the diary entry is that you might be writing it only when there's something interesting happening. That's one version of what a diary is. Or you might be writing a diary every day just to capture your thoughts. There's a lot of different concepts of what people think of when they think of diary. So why would any magazine editor be interested in your thoughts? Why would any magazine editor be interested in a step-by-step play-by-play of what you did that day? Or even just the step-by-step play-by-play of the interesting days in your life? Why would that appeal to them? you guys might have some ideas, or you might not know honestly why editors are interested in that. But the thing is that these pieces are so easy to write that the more important thing than why would an editor ever be interested in that is to think, why would an editor be interested in that from me about this topic? And when we've talked in the last few webinars in this series, we've looked so far in the last 4 weeks at postcard pieces. We've looked at guide features, which are where you give a lot of information about a few different topics, perhaps in one place or in a larger area. We've looked at a basket of kittens feature, where you take one theme or one topic, and you find 3, 5, 15, 105 different things that all revolve around that topic. And we've also looked at a quest piece, where you take a trip that you've been on, and or a trip that you're going to go on, and you attach an objective to it. I want to wind my way across the Aegean like Odysseus did on his way home from Troy. I want to find the best pizza in New York's Little Italy. And your journey centers around that one thing. So all of these are different types of feature star articles, but I kept the diary piece for last for an important reason. Because in a certain way, many of the things that we've looked at this month and many of the different types of articles that you see in magazine could in a way be something that a person might write in their diary, right? A quest piece is certainly something that a person might write in their diary. A postcard, which is kind of like an atmospheric, short, descriptive piece that gives a sense of place of a destination, that's something that some people write in their diary. They kind of make these verbal sketches or like written sketches about things, right? So when we talk about a diary piece in terms of the kind of things that you're going to see in magazines and websites, what I'm really talking about is a piece which you might think of as a trip report. So somebody has gone somewhere, and in this piece, they're essentially relaying what they found, what they did, what they saw, maybe what they ate, in a way that has a sort of reporting home aspect to it. So it kind of feels like you're writing an email to a friend, or perhaps you have gone on a scouting trip for your wedding or for something that might be happening for work, an event. And you're just writing back this very factual description of what you did, what you saw, and maybe what you thought of it. And the thing is that that concept that I just said, a very factual description of what you did and what you saw, is really what we're going for here by and large. And so one way to think of that is that it's almost like a guidebook in narrative form. So I know guidebooks are a little bit less commonly used now. Folks tend to use blogs more so than guidebooks in terms of giving themselves destination guides. But how many of you guys have used, let me know in the chat box, how many of you guys have at some point in your life used an actual physical guidebook to guide yourself around a destination? When I first started traveling a lot, I used to go to the bookstore a couple nights a week, or maybe like, you know, 2, 3 months before my trip, and I would just camp out in the guidebook section, and I would just kind of read through different sections in all of them and figure out not just which guidebook had the most information about where I wanted to go. For instance, one time I was going to northern Spain, and only one of the 5 different guidebook companies that I looked at even covered the city that I decided I wanted to go to. But I would read them all and try to figure out which voice was the type of traveler that I felt like for that trip. Which voice, which spoke to me? You know, if I was going to India, was it going to be the person who was going to a lot of parties? Probably not. Was it going to be the person who wanted to go to every single temple and museum? Probably not. But here's somebody who's, you know, here's a guidebook writer or guidebook voice. It's like kind of interesting food, gives you a good historical background of things, you know, has not too inexpensive but not too expensive places to stay. And I would say, aha, this is the guidebook for me. So these diary pieces function in a similar way. We can sometimes look at a guidebook and just think of it as the textbook rather than the guidebook. As in, it, you know, educates you, it has, you know, an index, it has what you need to know to get around. However, a better way of thinking of guidebooks, and in turn, this slightly more narrative version of a guidebook, which is the diary style piece, is that they have a voice, they have a slant, they have a personality, but that shows through very slightly. It shows through in choices. It shows through occasionally in little, you know, commentary in the words. It shows through in the type of history and the amount of history that they choose to include. But by and large, the writing is very factual. It's very to the point, and it's very reported. Now, this, what I just said, reported, is one of the big differences between the diary style pieces that don't fly for print and the diary style pieces that do. So tell me in the chat box, if you, besides what I just said about being reported, if you were to think about a diary style piece in the way that I've just explained, so somebody's gone somewhere, because blog posts can also be reported, right? Somebody's gone somewhere, you know, they've done this turtle walk on the beach, they've done a sailing trip, you know, they've done a clam bake, and now they're writing up that trip report. What are going to be the differences, let me know in the chat box, you think, between that piece on a blog post and that piece in a print outlet, like a newspaper? Marilyn has chimed in with, a blog entry would be much more informal, wouldn't it? And I find that choice of words really interesting, right? Much more informal. And I think that's definitely one way to think of what we commonly conceptualize as diary, right? You're either speaking to yourself, or perhaps you have a certain thing that you think of when you write your diary, like, you know, maybe you're writing it to a person, or maybe you think that you're writing it to your future self or something like that, right? But that concept of the diary is quite private. And I feel like when people write on their blogs, even though, of course, you're writing for a public audience, I think a lot of folks have this idea that they're just writing to, you know, one reader or the readers that they know very well. And so it does inherently feel, if not casual, then more familiar, I think would be a great way to think of that. Yeah. And informal can also come into play, perhaps with this concept of being reported that I talked about. So Kirsten's got another one. Maybe a blog piece is more personal and a print piece is more universal. And Lisa said a blog post might be more personal and biased. I think that's a really interesting point that Lisa said about being biased. And, you know, with travel, more so than with other types of journalism, and I'd have to check which Lisa this is, if she's, no, you're not, so I don't know this Lisa's background, but so with travel, more so than with other types of journalism, I find that the pieces tend to inherently be a bit more biased because the writer is showing their opinion of the destination, and that's a lot more important to the sense of the destination, perhaps, than in other pieces where other types of journalism where having, you know, such a lack of bias that you wouldn't even take like a bottle of water from the place you're visiting because that would be viewed as bias. That the line is more towards personal or bias in travel writing because that's what allows you to understand the place, how that place relates to the person who is writing about it. But Kirsten had this point about being personal versus universal. And for those of you that joined us for the last couple webinars that we've done about features, having something that is both personal and universal is actually a really important and inherent part of something like the quest piece that we looked at last time. So I think the diary pieces have a lot of these characteristics. They do seem personal, but they should touch on the universal. They might seem to have some bias because it's the person talking about their specific trip, but they only have their own eyes, their own experiences from which they could possibly look at the trip that they've been on. So as we talked about, these diary pieces have lots of different types of trips. They could be quest pieces. They could be where you're city hopping. There's all sorts of different formats that sometimes feel like they fall into this diary piece, whether it's a different type of itinerary or a different type of piece. But what happens really is that diary style pieces, I find these different things that we talked about, whether it's personal versus bias or informal or universal, those things can vary a little bit with the type of outlet that they're on. But what really separates a diary style piece from in a print publication versus a blog, I think, is a lot of what might be called puff or fluff or filler is a good way to look at it. So there's a really excellent slide that I've asked so many different people and no one has quite been able to find, which is from the Travel Blog Exchange Conference maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And it was done by Robert Reed. And he took a diary style piece from a major newspaper and a diary style piece from a blog. And he put them up on the screen next to each other. And he highlighted different types of writing. He highlighted descriptive writing. He highlighted historical background information. He highlighted quotations. He highlighted action. And there was one more thing that he highlighted. It was talking in the first person. And he had them side by side. And you could see that the piece that was a blog had so many sentences that started, I this, I that, I this, I that. And the other piece had a lot of what you think of as reporting. And I've pulled up for you, and like I said, I cut off where this is from, and the text is a little small, so hopefully you won't be able to just type it out and Google it. But I wanted to read a little bit for you from this, which is from a blog, and then we'll go back and talk about how this plays out in the different outlets. But this piece begins, and this is actually really diary style in terms of it says day one, day two, day three, and I just took two paragraphs from it, and I don't know that we actually need both paragraphs, but here's an example of more of the blog style. I've just arrived in Paraguay, and I am, no comma on and, by the way, I'm already really experiencing the culture, exclamation mark. I've hailed a cab after I got off my plane, and while the radio was on, I got to listen to some authentic Paraguayan music. Luis Alberto de Parana was the one singing, I found out, from the driver. He was a singer in the 50s and is now a national music icon in Paraguay because he was the most famous musician to originate from here. It was pretty interesting to find out. I did some research later and also found out that he had played with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones on stage before, exclamation mark. One of his albums sold 30 million copies, so he was a pretty big artist back in the day. I hadn't known that Paraguay ever produced any musicians. However, when the driver switched the station, I was surprised to hear ethnic Latin music on the radio, exclamation mark. I had assumed that the popular music in Paraguay would consist mainly of English pop songs and only a few occasional Spanish songs. In countries like France, Germany, and Spain, the music is often mostly North American. It was very refreshing to see that not every country played the same music as the next. However, the pop genre is still prevalent in Paraguay, just like the rest of the world. Spain has put its own spin on it, however. Pop can sound very different in Spanish than in English. Some Latin musicians that are popular in Paraguay include Enrique Iglesias, Alquilados, Iván Zavala, and Los Verdeleros. However, as far as I know, there weren't any famous Paraguayan-born musicians other than Luis Alberto del Parana. It was a little disappointing to learn. So this is one of those things, like I said with the quote about pornography from the Supreme Court justice, where you know it when you see it. But what are those things that allow us to know when we see it, that this is more of that informal, if you want to call it that, casual blog style piece? A couple things. So sentences like, it was pretty interesting to find out. It was a little disappointing to learn. These are things that I occasionally see in people's pitches, like just the short versions, like this was very interesting, or I thought this was very interesting. Those creep into pitches even. And these are the type of sentences that make editors, in this case, I mean, of national magazines, national newspapers, say, I don't care if you think it's interesting. Show me that it's interesting. I want to say that it's interesting. I don't want you to tell me that it's interesting. So in this case, we can see that the author here did include some research, but as they discussed the research, Like I mentioned from this excellent slide from Robert Reed's keynote at TEDx, all of presenting that research seems to have started with I, okay? So they hailed the cab. We never really need to know that you've hailed a cab. We never really need to know that you walked out of your door. We never really need to know that you sat down in a cafe. Those are not pertinent things in a diary-style piece that's appearing in print, okay? And she's saying Luis Alberto de Parana was the one singing. I found out from the driver. So this is passive, right? Why can't she say the driver said or the driver explained, right? It's couched as her. And then she goes into saying he was a singer in the 50s, now a national icon. It was pretty interesting to find out. I did some research later and also found out we don't need to know when she did the research. This is another thing that when you're writing diary style pieces, the time needs to transpose. So you will be writing things in your diary style pieces that are research that you did later or research that you did before you got there, but things that explain cultural concepts or the history of the destination without you needing to tell us when or how or the circumstances in which you found out that information. So we see this happen again lower down. The author was surprised to hear this. The author had assumed that the popular music. And then she has a sentence that's not assuming, right? In countries like France, Germany, and Spain, the music is often mostly North American. Now, even though we're looking at a diary style piece, right, where it doesn't matter, you know, what you think or what happened to you, a sentence like this should be qualified somehow. So either, like, we don't know how much time this person has spent in France, Germany, or in Spain, what authority they have to say that, right? And so, you know, as it continues, the writer says some Latin musicians that are popular in Paraguay include blah, 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 blah. According to who? Like, where did that come from? So one of the things that you notice in this piece is that in these more blog-style diary pieces, there's a big question of authority on a lot of the facts that are transmitted, where you really don't know where the person heard this information, if this information is reliable. And so that's really a big piece here that separates the type of diary style pieces you would see in these publications, and I'll go through each one in its own time, but is that authority, that reported facts, that sense that the information contained within the piece has some kind of weight in the outside world and is not purely opinion. So when there are things that are opinion, they should be used sparingly and they should be used to affect. Okay? So these are the four main different settings in which you are going to see a diary style piece today. Now, they used to be a lot more prevalent in print settings before blogs. And then what happened was there was less need for editors to pay people to write first person, non-narrative, non-quest, not highly reported pieces because there were so many of them out there already. So there wasn't so much of a need for them to publish them. But what happened was, I'm sure you guys have felt it, people get roundup fatigue. People don't just want to have information thrown at them in an entirely third-person setting. People like the first-person voice. They like to follow along someone else's trip. And not every trip can be a quest. Not every trip can be a Don Georgian personal essay. Not every trip can be a beautiful story-structured feature with a transformational moment at the end where you have an epiphany about life, the universe, and everything. Not every story ends up being like that, and not every writer wants to write those. But editors still need trip reports from all sorts of places in the world, and they are happy to pay for them. And this is where. So newspaper travel sections. We're going to look at a few of these in a little bit, actually, because these are one of the really great places still today to find these type of articles. And I know that people often think, and I think part of this is because we tend to look at newspapers online. I know people often tend to think you see on really clickbaity type of things. So I have the Dallas Morning News up, and let me pop over to there. We'll leave the slides for 1 second. And what you'll see is that if you just look at the homepage, if you look at what they have loaded up there, There is definitely this sense that there is a lot of, oh no, we've lost the ability to switch to different screens. Let me try again. Uh-oh, guys. All right, so I'll tell you what I see on Dallas Learning Maker while I try to get this functionality back. I'm sorry we're having some trouble with the slides today on the web platform. Okay, great, here we go. So what you'll see when you go to whether it's Dallas Morning News or HuffPo or even BBC.com, which we're going to look at later, is that on the homepage, like when you first look, there tend to be these things that seem very clickbaity. They really seem to be like those, typical headlines that are 17 ways to do this, or very servicey oriented things, like blah, blah, blah to do with your dog, that kind of thing. And the reason for that is that the metrics that web folks are tracking do tend to be, what gets the most clicks. Okay, great. Let's put that on the homepage and we'll just keep looking at that. But what happens, I'm so sorry, it's still not showing up. But what happens is that they're publishing a lot more content than that. And that content is still being found in search. That content is still going out in their newspaper and also in their newsletters to subscribers. And that's the type of content that I know that you're all more interested in writing rather than this. I don't know why they've got such a poorly lit photo on the homepage of DallasMorningNews.com's travel section. But what are your pet peeves when it comes to hotels, as in your pet peeves about your pets? I know this is not what we all aspire to write. And a lot of people come and tell me, oh, well, everyone is only publishing this, this, and that. But I can tell you, because I look at physical copies of this stuff all the time, that this is not what is in the print issue, okay? This is very different than what you see in the print issue. So we can see here we've got some very newsy pieces. Book this swanky cottage. So that's basically like they went on Airbnb and they found something that's interesting and they wrote a story about it. This one is just probably a straight press release. The storied Aspen Hotel is a Dallas favorite and now it's expanding. We've got Southwest plans to open four more flights. We've got very, very straight news. Five tortured bodies in Cancun, quite serious. And it takes us quite a while. Again, news, advice, flying style. Where is the actual destination content, right? You got to go way far down before you get that. We've already gone, let's see, this is the style section, this is the top. We've gone two folds and we don't see that. And so it's very easy to think that outside of service, that these pieces aren't out there. But the thing is that nothing could be further from the truth because what you're seeing on there is what they are publishing, they're highlighting on their website. And it's been really great to see how many sections in newspapers are super easy to pitch that writers just don't know about because you don't really see them on the newspaper's websites or they're not easy to find. They're often highlighted in the newsletters, they go out to newspaper subscribers, but they're not going to be right there on the homepage. And so what that means is that in newspaper travel sections, and like I said, we're going to look at some of the diary style pieces in newspaper travel sections in a bit, there's tons of opportunities for these first person diary style pieces because if you are picking up the print version, you're much more interested in spending some time reading some stories rather than getting quick tips or hearing about Texas's power outlet and how that's going to affect your flight. You would read about that online. But when you pick up the print version, you're looking to follow some sort of narrative. You're looking to follow someone else's story. And newspapers come out way more than magazines, guys. Newspapers come out 52 times a year. With the exception of one or two weekly magazines, there's no magazine opportunities out there for you that come out that frequently. So if you get in with a newspaper editor, even if they're paying, 30 or 50 cents a word rather than a dollar a word, you've still got four times the opportunities to get published with that editor. So your bang for the buck in terms of making that relationship is huge. Now, I just want to say a little sidebar about how many newspaper travel sections are out there because we've really done a lot of digging into this lately. So there's about five US magazine or US newspapers, pardon me, that have dedicated travel editors, dedicated travel sections. And those are the New York Times, of course, the Washington Post does some travel, but also the Wall Street Journal. And the San Francisco Chronicle actually has two different travel editors. And the LA Times not only has a travel editor, but they also have a staff travel writer. The Dallas Morning News has somebody who edits travel in a couple different sections. And the Chicago Tribune does publish some travel, but it pretty much entirely comes out of press releases and off the wire and out of syndication and some things like that. So there's really those main five, but you will still see travel pieces in the Denver Post, in the newspaper, I'm blanking on the name, but the newspaper in Sonoma. I've picked up newspapers in Sarasota, Florida. They had some coverage. So don't discount the newspapers that are city newspapers in, you know, tier two or tier three cities, or even in smaller areas than that, because those can be really nice places to put diary style pieces. And the next question, of course, is, but do they pay? Because this is always the question for newspapers. And the national newspapers that I was talking about, those do typically pay 50 cents a word and up. But these smaller newspapers, they might not pay so well, but there's a great thing here in terms of getting more bang for your buck per trip, which is that these diary style pieces are so easy to write. And when you have a clip from a trip that really displays a lot of what you did on that trip, that gets placed in a newspaper, that's really great for you to show the next time that you're looking at going on a press trip somewhere. PR people really value newspaper clips. And so it gives you a really nice in to say, well, you know, I'm not sure where I'm going to pitch this trip yet, but I've written for this newspaper before. That really is a good way to get yourself on press trips if that's something you're interested in. So let's look now, taking away from newspapers for a second, let's talk about the type of websites that are publishing these more diary-style pieces. Now, obviously, we talked before about blogs, and we talked about those being different types of pieces and what we're looking at today, but there are several editorial outlets, and I say editorial outlets rather than just websites, because these are really magazines, essentially they're really magazines that take place online. And so BBC Travel is a really great example. There's one website that I know several of you have written for, which is called Go Nomad. They also take these diary style pieces, but they only pay $25 a word and you have to submit the full piece on spec. So please be pleased, do not leave this webinar and go pitch your diary style piece to Go Nomad, because you can pitch it to BBC Travel and get paid 10 times as much, actually more than 10 times as much. So BBC Travel is one of these. Huffington Post can take these, but you know, as you may or may not have heard, Huffington Post pays some people, but not all people. So if you're just looking for the cred from having published on Huffington Post, you can do that, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, because besides BBC Travel, which everybody knows, which publishes really a lot of stuff, there's also things like CNN. There are magazine websites that are also publishing these types of things. Sever and Afar, which are two magazines that I know a lot of you guys love, they both publish diary style pieces on their websites as well. And that's actually a place where they like to put things that are of that nature that they like. They like the trip and they like the writing of the author, but they just can't figure out exactly what to do with those pieces in their print magazine. So these diary style pieces, like I said, with newspapers, you're going to be getting about 50 cents a word. On editorial websites, there's typically going to be a flat fee. It's going to be somewhere between, say, like $250 and $400 if you're doing it on a good website. If you're doing it on a smaller website that's not going to be like BBC level, you should still be looking at minimum $150. Don't give away a diary style piece, which is talking about your entire trip, for less than that, okay? Because once you have written that piece and you've covered all these different things from your trip, you're cutting yourself off from a lot of other different options in terms of where you can publish that content. So don't take that first to a small place, because what you're doing is you're just depriving yourself of income writing about that same trip for somewhere that would pay you better, either for one small slice of it or for a whole diary style piece, okay? So another one I put in here, I think is gonna probably be a surprise to a lot of you. So how many of you guys, let me know in the chat box, and I won't pause for this, but please do let me know. How many of you guys have heard of trade publications, have heard me talk about trade publications, have some sense of what trade publications are and what they do? Because this is actually one of the coolest and easiest places to put diary style pieces is in trade publications. So trade publications are magazines that you can't buy on the newsstand. They aren't handed out, but they are distributed on a limited circulation basis to people who work in a particular industry. So in the case of travel, those can be travel agents. They can be people who book travel in a corporate setting. They can be people who plan conferences. They can be, there's a lot of really interesting, weird ones, like people who, it's like hotel interior design and things like that. So there's a lot of trade magazines out there, but there's some that are less specific and they're more for everybody in the travel industry with all sorts of different jobs. And Travel Weekly, which is also available online, but Travel Weekly is a good example of that. And these trade publications do tons, just tons of diary style pieces, because what's happening is that these trade publications are for people who work in the industry. Obviously, they're traveling a bit themselves, but they can't be everywhere. They can't get everywhere, and they want to know what's going on in a certain destination that's new, that they might be thinking about going to. They just want to hear what it's like. They want essentially the TripAdvisor / Yelp version of it, but from a reputable source, from somebody who works in the industry. They want to be reported. They want to know that it's reliable information. But what they really want is a trip report from a vetted source, okay? And so what happens is that Travel Weekly and other trade publications like this are often sending, and when I say sending, I really do mean they will put you on a plane, they will pay for your ticket, and they will send you there. Someone that I coached went to Maldives in this way the other day. Sometimes, though, they're working with the Convention and Visitors Bureau or the Tourism Board to send you there, but they are often sending you. So it's not like with the New York Times, you have to get there on your own dime and you'll pay some of your expenses. So these trade publications are sending me places to check it out and then do a trip report for their audience of other people who work in the travel industry with what you saw, what you did, and what you thought. And these are some of the slam dunk easiest, fastest diary style pieces to write. And it's really lovely because the trade magazines don't compete with consumer magazines. So you can write that diary style piece for a trade publication and then turn around and sell a slightly different version of it to a consumer publication, or chop that trip up into lots of different pieces and sell it around. And you're not conflicting with the story that you already wrote. Now, I mentioned when we were talking about editorial websites, I mentioned the magazines that have websites that are publishing this type of stuff. And you will also, however, occasionally see diary style pieces in print magazines. And it seems so weird that somebody would get paid $3,000 to go stay in a villa in Tuscany for a week and see what it's like to stay in a villa and get to be paid $3,000 for that and all of their expenses. But it happens. And it happens for the same reason that I was talking about, that you see with the people writing for the trade magazines, which is that there are travelers who just want to know what something is like. Maybe they're considering going there. Maybe they are just armchair travelers who want to stay home and hear about what it's like. But they want to know first, and they want to know not from Yelp and not from TripAdvisor, and they don't have any friends who've gone there, and they want to know from a trusted source. And that's why you're still going to see diary style features out there, even in the highest level of print magazines. Okay, so again, a good way to remember the bad version of these pieces is that it would be the email that you write home to your close friends and family that now might be that post that you would put on Facebook for everyone to see. But the good version is going to have reporting. What it isn't going to eschew, though, is that sense of, I went here, I did this, I did that. But the writing will be better. Not every sentence is going to start with I. Not every single thing on that trip is going to be included, but a lot of it will. And there's going to be more reporting. Now, sometimes that reporting will come in the guise of actual dialogue and quotes from people who were met along the way of the trip. And sometimes that reporting will come in the form of background. But they tend to follow a structure that you'll find very familiar, whether you've been following our other webinars on features and we did on quest pieces and things like that, or you've just heard about the three paragraph essay when you were in school, which is that they do tend, but not always, but they do tend to have what I call the three key stops and then the rest. And so what happens is that the pieces often begin with the author getting to the point very quickly, saying where they went and why, how did they end up there? And sometimes that has to do with something that the place is known for. So it's not going to be a quest piece where they're specifically looking for the best chilaquiles in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm in Phoenix right now, so that was all I could come up with. But they might mention, I came to Phoenix looking for the best south of the border food north of the border. But then the whole piece isn't going to be about that. But they're just explaining to you why they had the idea to come here. And it's often pegged to something that the location is known for. And then when they start giving you background on the location, this is what makes it different than a quest piece, is that the background that they're giving you isn't going to be just about chilaquiles or green chilies or whatever the case may be. The background is going to be more general background on the city in terms of who lives there now, the history, what type of background they give tends to depend quite heavily on the audience of the publication at hand. Now, like I said, the three key stops section is not a must. It's not always there. It makes a much better diary piece when you do that little kind of intro, you give some information about the place, and you talk more in depth with a little more expansion about some of the stops that you went on to paint more of a picture of the place before you get into the more laundry list of all of the things that you did slash that are available to do there. And if any of you were with us for the webinar that we did previously, which was on the guide style piece, what I said in that webinar was that you tend to have paragraphs which might list as many as 8 or 12 different things that you can do in one place per paragraph. And that is what starts to happen after the three key stops here. So especially if you're reading newspaper pieces, these are quite long, and that's one of the reasons that getting 50 cents a word can be great, because a magazine space is a huge, huge premium. Magazine pages are small. They've got about half the pages are ads and half the pages are content. But in newspapers, there's a lot more space for text. I was skimming through with someone who writes for the database for us as we were figuring out how to start putting newspapers into the database. We were looking, and there was just like 3,000 words of article there. So if you're getting paid 50 cents a word for your diary piece at $1,500 a pop, and you get to write those, you know, even if it's only like every 8 or 10 issues, that's a pretty nice take home that you're getting from that newspaper. And part of what fills in that space is this mini roundup of the extra things. So for instance, I was just at a conference in the Washington State's wine country, and I went on a post trip, which was more around beer and cider and kind of different types of drinks, but we did stop at some wineries. And so for that roundup style piece, I could just include all sorts of different wineries that they have and what they're known for and the different grapes they grow and things like that. It really has a bit of a laundry list element to it. And then something that you'll see with these diary style pieces is that they typically have some kind of resolution after that laundry list, but it usually feels a bit weak. And that's because they haven't set up an arc to the story. There's no conflict like we talked about last week with the quest pieces. So let's take a look at some of these. So I'm going to have to switch the slides here. So we're going to look at the Dallas Morning News. And let me see if I can get this up without an issue for you. There we go. So this is Dude Ranch, fishing, and more. Colorado is a great outdoor getaway. So I'm going to pop this in the chat box so you guys can open it along with me if you're interested. So you can tell from the title that this is a really general piece, right? They don't even talk about a specific part of Colorado. And it's not even just about dude ranches. So how does it start? For a midsummer trip last year, my partner and I wanted to experience something both outdoorsy and out west. So that's why, right? That's the why they got into this, okay? Why Colorado? At the top of our list of activities were horseback riding, fly fishing, and river rafting. And we found all that we yearned for in central Colorado. Now, I bet a lot of you are saying, like, wow, this paragraph does not blow my mind. Like, how is this so different than a blog post? So then we get into the part where you start to see more of the reporting aspect of it. The trip started at a unique spot called the Smith Fork Ranch, nestled on 350 acres in the fabled West Elk Mountains of the Gunnison Natural Forest. Smith Fork has been a working dude ranch since the 1930s. Now, these are things that I wouldn't always see. These are the kind of things that when you write for print, you just have to spend maybe like 30 minutes on that paragraph looking up all these things to make sure you get all the names right. So he's got, you know, the everything capitalized, everything correct titles, exact number of acres. He doesn't say why the mountains are fabled, but it gives kind of a sense of these West Elk Mountains in the National Forest and how long it's been a working bee ranch. When Marley and Linda Hodgson purchased the ranch in 2000, the old log cabins that served as the principal logging and dining structures were in serious disrepair. Instead of tearing down and building new, the Hodgsons decided to carefully rebuild the ranch log by log, keeping it pretty much the way it was. So you'll see here that this does not start with I, even though it's about the writer and the writer's partner. This does not start with I, even though it is the top of their list of activities. The writer could have said, we found all we yearned for from our list of activities, but they start at the top. So you'll see that this is one of the key differences. There's not a lot of I as the focus here, even if I is the subject of the sentence. And as we get into the background of the place, you see that it goes right into reported information. So let's go down and see what are their examples. So they talk more about the reconstruction, the preservation, and more, you could almost call it PR information, but more description of the ranch. This is something that you see a lot in these diary style pieces where it almost seems like there's more description of each element. And that's why I told you way back in the beginning of the call to think of this as something more like a guidebook in kind of narrative form, right? They're giving really a lot of information here about not just the lodge itself, but also the family who created the well-known Gurkha bag line of luggage, okay? So they continue on talking about what's special about the ranch. And then if we keep scrolling past these ads that don't display because I have an ad blocker, we're going to get to the rest of the text. Sorry, I'm not sure if you can see. He's getting sad. You know, I've had this tab open and waiting for you guys for a while because it doesn't like that I have too many browser windows open. Let's see if we can get the rest of this. Otherwise, we can go over to a different piece. Even though I really wanted to show you guys this one, let me give it one more try. Okay, let me just flip over and show you this in the browser. No, sorry, I can't get it in a different browser because I'm doing webinar joins in the same way. Okay, let me just try one more time, guys. So someone asked if Dallas Morning News will be in the database soon. Alicia, if you would like to send us a copy, then we will add it very soon. But until I can get physical copies, that's really the holdup for us in terms of adding any newspapers to the database. So if any of you guys have a newspaper that you'd like us to include in the database, we need to have 2 or 3 weeks of physical copies. So that's why it takes us a little while to get the newspapers going, because it's hard to collect physical copies from places that we don't have somebody based. So, all right, so here we're back. Okay, great. So, as I said, there were 4 whole paragraphs of description about the ranch. And then finally, we get into more of this what I did content. So this is when I was talking about how newspapers really have a lot of expansive space that's often filled with this description and background about different places. So the author said, I spent my mornings waking as the sun first peeked through the dew-covered scrub oak trees. Is this flowery writing? No, he's giving description about what it looked like. So it's observations, it's facts. Hiking to one of the many ponds or small rivers on the property and casting for brown and rainbow trout. After this relaxing morning ritual, I joined my partner for a steaming pre-breakfast coffee and muffin on our porch as the sun burned off the chill. During the day, we'd hit the arena to work on our horsemanship or join some of the other guests on trail rides throughout the property. Now you'll notice something curious here. There's a little bit of detail where he's talking about the type of trout and the trees, but a lot of the stuff is pretty vague, right? He doesn't say like where the coffee is roasted. He says some other guests. He doesn't give the names and occupations of the other guests. He says the resort also offers speed shooting, mountain biking, hiking, and breathtaking views of Needle Rock, a majestic volcanic pinnacle that sits atop the property. So these paragraphs, when he talks about what he did, the writer himself, there's not such reported detail here. And that goes back to what I was saying, is that the specific things that this writer did are not the focus here. So what is? Meals are highlighted at Smith Fork Ranch, and the resort prides itself on using locally grown organic foods whenever possible. Nearby North Fork Valley, once rife with fruit orchards, has evolved in recent years into Colorado's breadbasket, with organic being the operative word. The resort's creative and eclectic young chef also oversees a large organic garden on the property and designs his menu around what is fresh and in season. The resort complements its homegrown cuisine with a wide selection of locally produced wines. Vintner entrepreneurs and some adventurous souls looking for quiet life are using the region's rich soil and sunshine to produce delicious Pinot Noirs, Pinot Gris, and other varietals and blends. So this was another interjection, right? He talked a little bit about what he did, but then he went back and expanded more about the details of his stay. After our stay at Smith Fork Ranch, we decided to change it up a bit and mix a little fly fishing with rafting at nearby Gunnison River Farms. So you notice, it seemed like in the beginning, this piece was going to just be all about that one specific place that he stayed. However, now they're somewhere else. And this is one of these things about these diary style features that I said right up front. There's no objective and there's no clear connection between the places that are being mentioned. And that's okay. That's how these pieces work. They don't necessarily have a thread, except that this is what the writer did. Okay, so the writer continues. The resort is tucked into an old fruit orchard on the banks of the Gunnison River with cathedral-like canyon walls as a backdrop. Here you can fly fish right in front of your private cabin or join a guide for a single or multi-day float fishing trips through legendary Black Canyon Gorge. Fishing or not, rafting this gorge was one of the most magical and beautiful experiences of our entire trip. So you'll see here is like an opinion. And as I mentioned, opinions in these type of pieces tend to fall flat, so you need to sprinkle them very sparingly. The writer continues, our guide, Ben Mangtutu, grew up in the region fishing with his father, who was one of the first guides to take guests down Black Canyon Gorge. Mangtutu has a wealth of local knowledge. He also teaches high school science, so in addition to mastering our fly fishing technique, we learned pretty much everything about the gorge, from hydrology to geology. After visiting Gunnison River Farms, we stepped up our rafting game and took a week-long trip down the mighty Colorado River sans guide. This may sound insane, but the Ruby Canyon stretch of the Colorado is not only amazing and breathtaking, it's also rather calm, class 1 to 2 rapids maximum. The many campsites along this 25-mile stretch of the river are situated at the mouths of long canyons that stretch inland and provide amazing hikes up to breathtaking vistas. Now, this is one of those things where you're like, well, this is a little vague, inland, amazing hikes, but then the author gives you something specific, okay? One of the memorable hikes, Rattlesnake Canyon, ascends to a ridge where there are 9 towering windstep sandstone arches. Bring plenty of water and avoid the middle of the day. It can get mighty hot out there. After all this outdoor action, we settled into the state's capital city, Denver, which is experiencing a renaissance of chic new bars, restaurants, and hotels. We stayed at the recently opened Maven Hotel, located in the Dairy Block. Once home to the Windsor Dairy Company, this ultra-hip new mini district in the heart of Denver's fashionable Lodo, or lower downtown area. The Maven is right across from the city's big league baseball park, and as it just happened to be the 4th of July, we not only caught a game, but also got to enjoy some amazing post-game fireworks display while resting in the cool grass of a baseball diamond. Now here's that sentence, like I said, it doesn't quite have the same weight as a lot of these features because there's not an arc. So the writer ends, not a bad ending to an epic summer holiday. So there's that little bit of resolution, but it doesn't really have that transformation, that epiphany type moment. So just going back up a little bit, you'll see where we got out of our three things. So we began with the lodge, talking about the lodge itself, and then the writer doing fly fishing there at the lodge, and then the meals at the ranch. And then we started to get more vague, right? So we talked a little bit about this fishing with the guide, and then suddenly they're on the Colorado River, and then suddenly there's hiking, and then suddenly they're in Denver, and then there's this hotel, and then there's a baseball game. And that's where it starts to get like it's really coming pretty fast and furious, and there's maybe a sentence or less per item. So that's the trajectory that these diary style pieces take. And I'll just drop a couple more in the chat box for you. Let me see if it follows me when I switch tabs. Yeah, there we go. Great. So I'll just drop a couple more in the chat box for you so you can see some of these other ones. So you can map out this same trajectory that I talked about in all of these pieces, where they begin very quickly, very directly. Why is the writer there? What is the writer telling you about? And then they get right into these three slightly more fleshed out examples of what they did on their trip. And then they start dropping in that roundup style bit where they're just here and then they're there and then they're there. And you don't necessarily know how they got from here to there, but there's just names and there's museums and there's attractions and there's hikes and then there's hotels. That's how these pieces end. So speaking of endings, I know that we're already over time. So let me get back to the slides and we're going to talk about pitching. So any questions about pitching that you guys have been holding on to very graciously because I asked you to hold on to them. Now is the time to pull those up because I'm going to talk about pitching. And like I said, there's a bit of a delay. So this is the time for you to mention your pitching questions in the chat box so that I can weave them into us talking about pitching. But here are some examples, like I said, in the chat box, other diary style pieces that you can take a gander at after the call. And you'll see that same structure that we talked about in those sentences where when the writer writes about him or herself, you feel like the air go out of the piece a little bit. You can feel it because of the juxtaposition between the description and talking about a place and the place being the subject, and then it suddenly being, I went here, I did this. But the writer saying, I did this and I did that, is what causes some action to move the piece along. Because if it was just all the background about that ranch, then we would just start to feel like it was marketing copy at some point. We just start to feel like we were reading the website of the ranch. So the connective tissue of the trip is I went here, I did this. But the muscles, what really does the work is those descriptions of the different places. So let me just take this question first from Kirsten. So when pitching editors, would we actually say to them, I'm pitching a diary piece or quest piece or whatever, or are these terms for narrative feature styles that you're using to help explain them to us? But to an editor, we'd actually say, I'm pitching a first-person narrative feature, et cetera. When you might want to check out our, we've got a replay of our webinar on how to craft travel article pitches coming, I think, quite a bit later this month. But we've also got the How to Craft Travel Article Pitches webinar in the webinar library, and I'll pull up that link for you. So in a pitch of any kind, you usually say, I'm pitching an article for your blah, blah, blah section. And blah, blah, blah can be your journal section, your where to go next section, your like a local section, but you want to use whatever is the name of the section that the editor uses because editors have been trained differently or not at all. And they all have different definitions of things, whether it's something from one publication to the next. Like one publication will have journal will be its feature section, and one publication will have journal be its front of book section. So even outside of the types of terms that I'm using, editors have competing terms for different things. So when you talk to an editor, and when you talk to anybody that you're trying to sell anything to, quite honestly, you want to use the same things that they say. So here is that webinar that I had just mentioned that talks about how to craft a pitch itself. So when you're pitching these pieces specifically, that was more of a general question, but when you're pitching these pieces specifically, I'll tell you the truth. Editors are really spooked by writers that they don't know very well these days, and for very good reason. A lot of writers these days are very flaky. They'll take on a piece and then they won't turn it in. I've noticed a lot of editors these days giving new to them writers very, very short deadlines. And that's either because they're only taking a chance on this writer because the person who originally had the article flaked, or they're giving you a short deadline to see if you actually pull it off. And if you don't, then they're going to assign it to someone else. So there's a lot of mistrust on the part of editors these days. And that's because the people who are out there pitching are not those of you who are super diligent and really take your time and make sure everything is perfect, which is why I want you guys all to be pitching more. But what that means is that a diary style piece, which really depends a lot on the quality of the writing and how interesting the trip was, is going to be a hard sell to start with. You do not want to pitch a diary style piece to an editor that you've never worked with before, unless there is a section in that person's publication, whether it's a newspaper or online or in a magazine, that's really specifically for diary style pieces. And you have a cool destination. You have a cool reason why you are the one who should write this piece. Maybe you've gone somewhere that's really hard to get to, or you've gone somewhere that you have personal connection to. Otherwise, it's hard to sell these first out of the gate to an editor you haven't worked with previously. But the beautiful upside of that, like I said, there's a lot of need for these pieces, especially in newspapers. And newspapers will take these if you haven't worked with them before because it's what they publish. So this is more when I say they can be a really hard sell the first time if they don't have a dedicated section. That's more for places like magazines and especially those trade publications, okay? But newspapers and websites like BBC, this is what they publish. So they're very used to getting pitches for these types of pieces. So when you're working with an editor that you've worked with a lot, the great upside of this is they are really happy to have you take on a diary style piece because they know you, they trust you, they know that they approve of your writing, they approve of your judgment, and that you're not just going to write something that comes back and they're like, there's just too many things in here that aren't interesting to our audience, right? Remember what I said, that part at the end, which is a roundup, that curation of it, it's like when I was talking about guidebooks before. It comes from the voice. It comes from the discretion and the judgment of that writer whose voice you trust. So if you don't have that relationship yet with an editor, they can be skittish to assign it with you. But once you do have that relationship, they'll give you a ton of them. And that's why trade magazines are really great, because once they know you, they're really happy to give you tons of those destination pieces. Now, the flip side with newspapers, though, remember I said newspapers are used to be, is like they'll assign them to you first time out. More of you, in fact, should be pitching newspapers because they're so easy to get into because not so many people are pitching them these days. And a lot of them do still pay quite reasonably compared to what you're getting paid for small magazines and websites. However, you cannot pitch a diary style piece from a press trip to a newspaper. And it doesn't matter whether they have a press trip policy or not. It is more because if they do not know you and you are pitching a piece that's based on a press trip, they can just smell it from your writing. They can just tell from the itinerary of the press trips that are running, so that when writers send them pitches, especially when they start seeing like 20 writers sending them pitches at the same time or whatever, however many people are on the trip, they know that those are all coming from that same press trip and that those aren't necessarily ideas that the writer had because they were great, because that place was interesting, but it's because it was included on the press trip. So if you have gone on a press trip and you are pitching a diary style piece, you need to be pitching not just around the itinerary, but you need to be really pitching around the sense of place that you discovered, perhaps if you did a day before or a day after the trip. So Spud Hilton, who is the editor at the San Francisco Chronicle, said, He'll take a piece that you wrote that's from a fam trip, but he shouldn't be able to tell from reading your pitch that it's from a fam trip. And this is another one of those things, like that Supreme Court Justice pornography quote. You might say, how can he tell? But he knows it when he sees it. So I'm going to leave you guys with that. So Kirsten has one question. She said she was just wanting to make sure whether or not we should use the actual terms diary request. But yes, I'd always refer to the relevant magazine section, which would also tell the editor what style of narrative piece is. So maybe my question is moot. And yeah, and that's really the thing, is that I teach you how to write in these articles and bold series, different types of articles, more so that you can see how to do a piece once you get an assignment in terms of the structure. But you have to lay on top of that structure the specific things that the specific magazine that you're working with does, and every magazine is different. So these structures that I teach you, we look at examples so you can see how it works in real life, but that structure is the important part. That's what you build on top of, using the voice of the magazine, using the style of the magazine, but it all starts with that structure. So thank you guys so much for joining us, and I hope you have a great rest of your week. And for those of you who are going to be at the Women in Travel Summit, I'm arriving tomorrow, and I will see you guys soon.